The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
So welcome again, everybody. Before we get started, I just want to let everyone know the rules of engagement. If you've never been to a story slam before, here are the rules. All stories must be true. All stories must be 5 minutes or less in length. The storytellers will receive a 4-minute warning. Dan, where's the bell? There you go. To let them know that they have 1 minute to wrap up. And all stories must be related to the theme of the evening, which is all about my mother. We have four guest judges tonight who will determine our winners. Leslie Banks is a New York Times bestselling author who has written on everything from romance to vampires, including books based on the popular Showtime series Soul Food.
All right. Hello.
Amy Z. Quinn, a.k.a. Citizen Mom, is a freelance journalist and shares tales of the feminist housewife at citizenmom.com. Elizabeth Wellington knows all about judging what's in and what's out as the fashion writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And Sean Wilkinson is a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist at the Daily News. You, too, can follow along with your own scorecards that you received on the way in. Each of the judges and you will give the storytellers 2 scores on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest. The first score is for content. Did the story have a beginning, middle, and end? Did the plot grab the listener? Did it describe characters and situations well? Was there any sort of, like, hook or, you know, unique observation? And does the story relate to the theme? The second score is for presentation. It's a measure of how well the storyteller, one, brings their story with an engaging or distinctive voice or style, brings the story to life, connects with and plays off the audience, stays focused throughout, and if someone goes over their time, you start taking points off their presentation score. And now, to show you how it's done, I'm going to bring back Philadelphia's Commissioner of the Department of Parks and Rec, Michael DeBarandidas.
Talk about pressure here, right after the rules and the competition judging standards. Well, anyway, all about my mother. Born Rosa Giunta, one of 8 children of immigrant parents from Sicily who came to America in the early 20th century, that's my mother. She was a generous, innocent, unpretentious woman who at times could be unwittingly funny. She deeply loved her family and all the people close to her. I was one of 5 children, born and raised in Downeytown out in Chester County. My father worked at a paper mill, which is where everybody worked in the town. And we lived in a little 2.5-room row house on William Street. We didn't have much money. And my mother was an expert at stretching a penny. And she was a great manager of the household funds. She was so good that she knew when, and this is the truth, I'm hitting one of the standards here, that she knew when my brother and I would take a nickel out of her purse, where we'd run to the corner store and buy a popsicle, which we quickly broke in half and sat under the tree and ate in the hot summer sun, or hot summer day. It was a very risky move on our part, but always worth it. When she had a little extra money, and in those days that was like $5 or $10, she would take it upstairs and put it under the area rug in my parents' bedroom. And she was getting older. My father died, and she was in her 90s, and my wife, Joan, and I, we'd go out on Sundays to take care of her. And we'd generally put her in a car and take her out and get a look at the green countryside. She really loved to do that. And one day when we were driving down this country road, she says to me, "Michael, do you remember where I kept the extra money? And I said, yeah, Mom. Where? She said. I said, under the rug in your bedroom. She says, oh, you remember. And she says, well, Michael, do you think people do that anymore? And before I could answer, she said, nah, probably not. With all the wall-to-wall carpeting these days, you can't get it under the rug. So she died 2 years ago. She was 98. She lived a beautiful, wonderful life, and we miss her every day. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. That was great. One word of caution before we begin. It's a little disclaimer. Two of the stories that you're going to hear today, though they're clean and they don't use bad language, do acknowledge the fact that people have sex. So if that's something that you're uncomfortable with, consider this fair warning. I promise they're tasteful. Okay, so now on to the competition. We're going to pick storytellers at random out of this bucket. The order is totally random. The first storyteller is Stephanie Gribaldi.
My mother was a yeller. Okay, yeah, sure, she peppered in the occasional beating, you know, to keep us on our toes, but mostly she yelled at us for everything. She yelled at me for things I hadn't done. I don't care if you were not the one who actually shot the hole in the kitchen window. That doesn't mean it was not your fault. She yelled at me for things I hadn't even thought about doing. Don't you dare ask me to buy you a car. Yes, I know you're 8 years old, but I want you to know now that I will never buy you a car. She yelled at me for things I didn't know I could do. Don't you look at me in that tone of voice, young lady. I got used to the yelling, but I'll never forget the day she did not yell and how it was almost somehow worse. That day had started off like any other of my great four-year-old days, watching my favorite TV show, Mr. Rogers. Now, before the show was over, before he left the neighborhood, he would always show you one last activity so you could practice it until you met him again the next morning. That's the kind of guy he was. And on this day, he had placed a small glass of orange juice on top of a small round tray, and with an agility you wouldn't necessarily expect from a man wearing a yellow cardigan sweater, he did this figure-eight move and came up without spilling a drop. Easy enough. Well, certainly easier than yesterday's sock puppets. But I wanted to practice it to make sure I got it perfect before I showed my mom. So I crept into the kitchen, no small shot glass, but I found a nice, big, unbreakable plastic glass. That'll work. Couldn't find any orange juice, but grape juice, and juice is juice, right? Poured it up to the brim. I knew we didn't have any of those cute small round trays, so I got the big family rectangular dinner tray. I went into the living room, in spite of my mother's warnings that the living room was not to be lived in, only cleaned. But I needed the space, the maneuverability, and I knew I'd be out of there in a flash, so she'd never know. And I was feeling really good about the whole experience until the very first flick of my wrist sent the cup into its downward death fall. And it went down clean, like an Olympic diver. It didn't splatter. It just left this one shockingly purple stain in the center of my mother's gold shag carpet. No. I knew it would be worse if she discovered it on her own, so I ran into her room and I said, Mom, Mr. Rogers, and no orange juice and the carpet! And she ran beyond me. And by the time I caught up with her in the living room, she was kneeling over the spot like you would a dead child. And I braced for the yelling, the screaming, the beating. But she didn't say anything. And when she got up, I could see she hadn't been crying. Her face was expressionless. And she walked past me without saying a word. And then she came back with something in her hand. Was it a belt, a whip? No. It was a black permanent magic marker. And she got down again on her knees, and she circled the spot and drew a little arrow to it. And then she wrote in black permanent marker on the shag, "Mr. Rogers did this." She proceeded again to walk past me, still not saying a word. She unplugged and hefted this giant TV out of our dining room, walked out to the car. Then she came back in for the TV in the bedroom and went out again without saying a word and left me, her 4-year-old daughter, alone for the very first time. I didn't know what had happened. When she came back, she had no TV. And I said, "How will I watch Mr. Rogers?" And she said, "You won't. He's a dangerous influence." I said, "But Mom." And then she threw this big black book at my feet and she screamed, "Choke on that, you savage." And I smiled, not because I was looking forward to reading the Holy Bible, but because my mom, the yeller I knew and loved, was back. Thank you.
That was awesome. That was a good job. So we also have prizes for all of our storytellers tonight. And I'm going to give Stephanie a Bubble Fun play set so she can play outside instead of in the house. Thank you. So now we're going to go to the judges. Who's ready? Elizabeth? 8 and 7. 8 and 7. Amy? 9 and 9. 9 and 9. Wow. Leslie? Oh, that was you. I'm sorry. Signe? 9 and 7. And last but not least? 8 and 8? 8 and 8. The second storyteller of the evening is Ryan T. Barlow.
So even as a very small child, I knew that my mother was not an intimidating figure in the grand scheme of things. She's 5'1½", which made her a lot shorter than pretty much every other adult I knew. She's very soft-spoken, very kind, polite, nice, very reasonable woman. So, you know, just all of the adjectives that don't describe intimidating. And that was my worldview until I turned about 10. So at 10 years old, I was flipping through a magazine, and I saw a product that promised to do things to my Super Nintendo that even I knew at that time were fundamentally impossible. But, you know, not being immune to the sexy lure of advertising yet, I found myself with my mom in Clover, which is a now-defunct department store, sort of like a prototype to Target. I thought that would get a cheer. Yeah. So, you know, I'm staring at this product there, and I'm like, "Mom, this is going to revolutionize the way I play video games," you know. And so my mom's like, "Oh, you know, I'll buy it for you, sure," you know. So we get it, and I go home, and 3 days later, I realize what I already knew, and I'm like, "This sucks." And so my mom's like, "Don't worry about it. We'll just take it back. You know, we know the receipt. We'll just get partial credit. Like, no big deal." I'm like, "Okay, great. Thanks, Mom." So we go to the customer service place at Clover, and the customer service lady at the counter there was not having it. She wasn't having anything that day. And so my mom's like, very reasonably, like, "Okay, you know, here's the situation. We just want partial, you know, store credit." And the lady's like, no. So my mom's trying to reason with her for like 5 minutes. And then, you know, this woman's just not having until something just snaps. Something in my mom, just the levees break, and my mom just starts yelling and screaming and just shouting her down. And I'm like, I hid behind like a magazine rack. I mean, like, this to me is like watching my mother tackle a gazelle in the wild. I'm like, I didn't even know she could do this. So I'm like, So, you know, the manager comes out. He's like, hey, so, you know, sure, whatever, get out of here. So my mom gets the partial credit because, you know, that's what she can do. And so we're in the car and she's calmed down some. And she actually apologizes to me because she's, you know, you're like, "This has never happened before. I don't know. You know, like, I don't know what came over me." And so, to this day, we rate her scale of angry, like as it approached, like as it approaches Clover Lady angry. So like if she's like, you know, I was like half Clover Lady, and we're like, oh, that's pretty serious. But that's not what I came here to tell you about. I came here to tell you about my genuine Italian leather jacket. So I'm 16. I'm in Italy with mom and dad. We're visiting my sister who's studying abroad there. And so this is back when Italy was still on the lira, so everything was pretty cheap. And my parents were like, you should get a leather jacket while we're in Florence, because Florence is like the leather capital of Italy or whatever. So I'm like, okay. So they offered to partially sponsor me. So they give me $50. I had $50. And so I'm like, $100 leather jacket. It's doable. So we're in this store in Florence, and we narrow it down to two jackets. The first jacket is this, like, black leather, you know, it's like really rough leather. It's got these funny buttons on it. It's a weird cut. And that's $100. So I can afford it. The second jacket is the world's perfect leather jacket. Unbeknownst to this Italian craftsman, he crafted the perfect leather jacket specifically for me. Like, just, I don't even know how he knew it. It just happened. You know, it's so soft. It's just the right cut. The color brown is perfect, and it has a very tasteful zipper. And so that's $200, and I can't afford it. And everyone's like, you need this leather jacket. It's the leather jacket. And the very sleazy Italian salesman's like, obviously, I'm going to get a very good sale on this. So he's like, well, you know, leather jacket, blah, blah, blah. And my mom's like, well, how come this one is, you know, so much more expensive than the other one? And this guy thinks, you know, he is the preeminent Italian leather salesman. And he decides that my mom is a stupid American tourist. And that was a huge mistake, because she proceeded to go full Clover Lady on his ass. She starts, you know, like, what about this one? What about, he's poking holes in all of his, like, his thing. Like, after a minute, he's like, oh, I gotta get to the manager. So the manager is like, I mean, if he's hiring the sleaziest, you know, salesman in Italy, like, he must have, like, he earned a stripe. So he comes out like, what seems to be the problem? 2 minutes later, I have the world's greatest leather jacket for a mere $100. Right? So, you know, and it's like, wow, like, you know, my mom, as it turns out, can be, you know, very intimidating. And she is here tonight. So, you know, if you see her, don't feel that you're, you know, just she's going to yell at you or something. Unless, say, like, you give her son a really bad score.
So, Ryan, if you think that, you know, you can get, like, these things that can do amazing things with Nintendo, how about some spy glasses?
Nice.
Because, yeah, if you're that gullible. all right, we're just going to go down the line. Judge number one. 6 and 6. All right. One of the things that we do at First Person Arts is that if you don't agree with the judge's scores, you can totally heckle them. So we encourage it. Ooh, see? Just like that. judge number two? 8 and 6. 8 and 6. Judge number three? 8 and 7. Getting better all the time. And judge number four? Oh. Oh. seven and six. 7 and 6. the third storyteller of the evening is Meredith. It appears DC brought their cheering section with them, so.
In my family, doctors are for broken bones and state laws. Anything else, my mom can handle. Seriously, before she was a mom, she was a nurse, and after she was a mom, she earned 2 degrees in alternative medicine. And I, alone among all of my siblings, never questioned her ways. Well, there's a little experimentation with a health clinic in college, but, you know, aside from that, she's essentially been my primary care physician for my whole life. And then I found a lump in my breast. Now, I'm 33 years old, no history of cancer of any kind in my family. Chances are I was totally fine. But I knew I would need to go to a doctor and get this checked out with their machines for seeing inside the body and everything. So I called my mom expecting an argument, but she said, yeah, you should get that checked out. So apparently the rule had changed, and doctors are now for Brake's laws and mysterious lumps. So the biopsy came back that it was benign, but might not stay that way, so I should have it taken out. So I called my mom, and she said, okay, good, now we know what it is. Let's talk about our options. Options? There's a lot of different ways to cut a lump out. I don't know. But I realized at that point that we had heard two different things in the diagnosis. I had heard, we'll cut it out, we'll close this chapter, and we'll just move on. She had heard, and now we enter the treatment phase. She said, come on. They said you have, like, what, 2 years before it turns into anything? Let's use that time. Let's play around. Let's see what we can do. To be fair, she has an unblemished record. She has successfully treated every cough, cold, fever, ache, pain, rash, infection, ailment of any kind anyone in my family had ever come up with. She even had some success at healing small broken bones. So she proposed a treatment plan aimed at dissolving the lumps so my body could dispose of it naturally. And I agreed to try it if I could also schedule the consultation with the surgeon. But I knew that my debate was not which method I was going to use. It was simply whether or not I was going to defy my mom in a substantive way for the first time in my life. So I called my sister, who has way more experience at that than I do. I said, what's going to happen? Is she going to stop speaking to me, kick me out of the family? And my sister said, she'll get over it. She got over it when you started wearing colored underwear. She'll get over this. I had forgotten about the great underwear rebellion of 94. My mom believed that all underwear needs to be white because it's only clean if it's bleached. I didn't think about it. And then I get to college, and there's this array of colored panties that all of my friends have. When she discovered, she comes out of the laundry room holding this pair of green panties saying, and what am I supposed to do with this? But ultimately, my sister's right. She got over it. So I scheduled the surgery. And then I got scared again. Because, I mean, this was a little bit bigger deal than what color my panties were. I mean, I was choosing to take a stand against my mom at the moment when I really needed her the most. I mean, I could not fathom having the surgery without her support. Well, eventually, the stress of not telling her overwhelmed my fear of telling her. And I started to realize that this was a little bit ridiculous. I mean, I am a grown-up. And if I want to have surgery, I can have surgery. And so I was like, forget it. And I grabbed my phone. I was going to call her. I was going to tell her what's up, you know? And I'm dialing and humming the Rocky theme song. And I'm ready for this. I'm just going to tell her. And it's ringing. And I get up and it answers. I said, Mommy, I want to have the surgery. Okay, please. And she said, okay. And the surgery was fine, and she was such a trooper. She sat there, and she listened to me go over and over the story in every gory detail, and she listened, even though I know that it made her stomach turn, and it made her heart hurt just a little bit. The only limit that she had was that she did not want to see the incision or the scar, but I was okay with that, because I realized that everybody has to draw the line somewhere.
Because you're pretty lucky, we're going to give you the luck of the Irish. Judges, y'all ready? We'll start with judge number 3. 8 and 9. Judge number 1. Okay. Judge number 2. 8 and 9 again. 8 and 9. Judge number 1 scores an 8 and a 6. And judge number 4 gives an 8 and a 7. Philly better step up their game. I'm just saying. Let's see if Michael McCary can do it.
Can I make this taller? handle it there.
Beautiful.
Well, that's too tall. All right, we're good now. All right, let's establish an inalienable fact. Nobody beats my mother, okay? Let's take all of the District of Columbia moms. We'll take the rest of the Philadelphia moms. We'll combine them with any other powerful woman on the planet. You can take Nancy Pelosi, Michelle Obama, I don't care who else, Hillary Clinton. Combine them all into a room, and nobody beats my mother. It's a fact, okay? Nobody is prettier than my mom. How do I know this? Because your mom looked into catalogs my mom modeled in and said, I can't look like that, all throughout the late 80s. And guess what? That was after she had two kids. Take that one home, all right? Your mom isn't smarter than my mom. Let's get that straight. She's got two advanced degrees and then took that into the real world and started two of her own businesses that she sold so I could get a degree. All right? Beat that. Fact of the matter is, your mom is not nearly as rebellious as my mom. I'll give you a case in point story. When I was six, I played on a soccer team that did not win a single game. We went 0-10. Okay? My mom very calmly went up to the coach after the season and said, you know, I don't know much about soccer, but I'd like to help and maybe we can improve the kids for next year. He said, what would an all-boys team of six-year-olds need to do with a woman? Yeah, nobody. No. Mom goes to the commissioner of the league and says, I'd like to start my own team. So she recruits me and a couple of my little friends that are now seven. And the next year, she proceeds to show up every single Saturday in hot pink stretch pants like Peg on Married with Children and lead us to an undefeated record. And then at the end of the game, stand first in the line and shake hands with the opposing coach, who was always male. Now, I don't know what your mom has done to further women's rights, but she certainly did not get an army of six-year-old boys to help her. All right? That's just a fact. All right? Because nobody beats my mother. Okay? Now, it's a little bit difficult to live with a woman like this when you're a boy who wishes your mom just made brownies and, like, Kool-Aid or something. I don't know. Every summer, we'd belong to this gigantic pool. My mom was a Division I athlete in two sports. Went to Olympic trials in swimming. All right? That's a footnote. Okay? Every 4th of July, they held a gigantic festival at this pool, okay? You'd have, like some watermelon competition and an egg toss. And then the big, gigantic grand finale of it every 4th of July was a big splash competition, okay? It's in the main pool, and the big splash competition was normally frequented by gigantic, burly men, lifeguards, never a woman. But from my 10th birthday all the way through my 16th, my mother entered every single year, and every single year she won, okay? This hurts the male psyche. While all the men would go up to the 5-meter platform and jump off and contort themselves into cannonballs and such and just try and lay their skin across the surface of the water to create a splash, my mother took a graceful approach. She went to the 3-meter springboard, would walk to the edge and with a pike position go up straight into the air and then a graceful can opener, creating an air pocket underneath her bottom and exploding water straight up out of the air. Every single year, she got out of the pool, went over to the judges' table, and collected that medal. You know what it's like to be the son of the woman who can do that? Oh, it just kills you. When I'm 16, I go and I enter the competition. Okay? I was a swimmer in my own right, and she had taught me a thing or two. We both make it to the finals, okay? And I'm going before her. Same way she does it. 3-meter platform, pike position, straight up into the air. My father says I look like a topless version of her. I hit the water. I cock the knee. Air bubble. Boom, boom. I'm feeling great. I get out of the pool, just like mom, over to the judges' table, throw the medal on my neck. She's not beating me. I weighed more than her, had just as good form. No way she makes a splash that big. The woman steps up to the 3-meter platform. My father goes over to the judges' table, and where the microphone of the MC is, hits play. He's in cahoots with her. I hear over the loudspeaker the final countdown start playing. And the woman is standing there waving like Miss America, like to her people. Unflawed, she goes to the edge of the 3-meter platform. She pikes up into the air. She goes. She gets to the apex of her jump. And what does she do? She does a backflip. Style points. Cocks her leg, hits the water, and makes a splash every bit as big of mine, even bigger if you hear some accounts of the story. Gets out of the pool graciously, walks over towards me, takes the medal off the back of my neck, and puts her arm around my neck, as any mother would a son who'd just been defeated, and whispers into my ear, "Nobody beats your mother."
Wow. Can she solve a Rubik's Cube?
No.
Judge number one scores it a 10 and a 10. Judge number two scores it a 9 and a 10. Judge number three, a 10 and a 9. And judge number four, a 10 and a 9. Next up, Brady Russell.
So this is a story about me and my mom and our cat. My mom is a single mother. Something you should know about me is I never should have been born from the perspective of the birth control industry. I'm a major catastrophe. But I was, and because I was born, really because I was born, that's why my mom was a single mother. And so we lived in southeast Kansas in this great big house, and when I was about 6 years old, my mom decided we should get a cat, and her friend Patty had a cat who had kittens, so we go over to Patty's house, and I pick the cat out, but my mom's the one who names it because she says the cat looks like a white cat that's been splashed with gray paint, and in fact, even like a little bit of the paint had got on her nose, and it was her nose was like half gray and half pink, which was totally cute. So we named her Splash. And Splash was like the most badass cat, man. Splash was amazing. I'll just tell one thing Splash used to do. You would walk into a room sometimes, and there'd be a door open, like a closet door open. So like the door would be like up here, and there'd be nothing around the door, but somehow Splash would just be up there sitting on the door, just chilling. And you'd be like, "Splash, how'd you get on the door?" And she'd be like, "I'm a cat. I can't talk." She wouldn't know, but Splash did all these things and that people, we would tell them, and they'd be like, your cat does not slide down banisters backwards. And we would be like, our cat really slides down banisters backwards. And roofers would be like, we roofed your house, and the cat, your three stories up, was up here all day. Cats don't do that. And we're like, our cat does that. So Splash was an amazing cat, and we really loved her. But the one thing about Splash is, she loved us or felt this loyalty to us, but she didn't really like us exactly. Like, she needed to like watch out for us and be there when we came home and like watch us come in. But if we tried to pet her, that wasn't cool. She was about like beating up other cats and fighting dogs and, you know, keeping things away from us, but not love. That wasn't her deal. Something else you should know about Splash is she was really good with doors. So when I was 10, Splash was 4, I was 10, my mom gets married for the first time since, you know, I've been around. And so we moved to another town, and when we moved to this new house, my stepfather, he'd never said this before, but he said, "No cat will ever live in my house." And we're both like, "What? Oh my, I mean, Splash has got to live with us, right?" But then my mom sort of freaks for a second, but then was like, "You know what? Actually, don't worry about it. He's not going to keep her out." Because like I said, Splash was really good with doors. So like we were constantly finding Splash inside, and she was there with us, and she's hanging out. And she ultimately turns my cat into a cat person. He is absurd with our kittens that we have at home now. Just really, it's like embarrassing. He's like a grown man, but this is how he is. And Splash did that, right? So my mom always theorized that Splash liked her best because she was the antisocial cat. Like, my mom didn't ever try to pet her or give her love or whatever. And so Splash was tight with all of us. Like, she sat with us all for dinner, and she'd watch us all around the house. She often spent nights with me. But it was my mom she had this special tie with. And you know, I think it's true for a lot of people. That first year of marriage my mom had with my stepfather was pretty hard. We lived in a different town. There was some alcohol drama. There was some rough stuff in that first year. It all ultimately worked out. But my mother was already kind of prone to depression. And Splash was the sort of cat that kind of knew when she was down. And so sometimes when my mom was really down, Splash would just kind of be there in this way that, like, I don't know, just the like my stepdad and I didn't get my mom was down, but our cat did, you know, and would be there. And, like, my mom knew that about her. And so they had this special bond. And So when Splash had these different jobs that she liked to do, and one of them that was particular to my mom and I is when my mom would hang the laundry at our third house. We lived in three different houses together. We had like five different cats over the course of the time we had Splash, but Splash was with us the whole time, and there was never any question of Splash running away, as some cats do when you change homes. And in that third house, when my mom would do laundry, she would go out and watch my mom hang the laundry up. We sort of viewed that as one of Splash's jobs. She had these duties. So then one day, my stepdad brings Splash into my mom and says, "Mama, this baby's too warm." And my mom looks at her, and she sees that her gums are all white and that she's got no energy. And we take her to the vet, and she's diagnosed with feline leukemia, which is pretty much a death sentence for a cat. And my mother, in a way that I'd never seen her do before, just completely loses it. I'm about 15 years old, I think, and this is the moment that my mom describes her viewing me as becoming an adult, because every time we went to the vet to talk about Splash's condition, my mom just pretty much couldn't talk. And so it was me, a 15-year-old person, and my mother, who must have been like, I don't know, 40 at the time, and just crying her eyes out. Eventually she stopped even coming inside and just let me go in and deal with the vet. In those final days, her death actually came pretty quickly. She got really, really sick, and we could see her fight really hard to live, because somehow Splash knew that we needed her. And the memory that I remember the most from those final moments of Splash's life was my mom going out one day to hang up the laundry. And even though Splash was barely moving at that point, was really not walking around at all, she went outside with my mom one last time for her to hang up the laundry. And that's kind of, in my mind, how Splash told my mom goodbye.
Obviously, since no cat could ever replace Splash, you're going to need these mousetraps. We had a family cat growing up, and she used to love to sleep underneath the wheel of my dad's car. And my dad left for work one morning and just forgot to check and rolled over her head. And my mom and I were outside on the porch, like, waving bye. And so they took her to the vet, and the vet was like, yeah, there's really nothing we can do. And so my parents decided, like, why prolong the inevitable? We'll just tell Trey that the cat died. So they're like, Trey, Bull died. And then they called the vet the next day, and the vet's like, come pick up your cat. She's got a cracked palate, but that's it. So then they had to explain to, like, a six-year-old why the cat was suddenly back from the dead. Nine lives. It's a real easy out. All right, let's go to the judges. Judge number one, 6 and a 7. Judge number two scores at a 9 and a 7. Judge number three, 8 and 7. And judge number four, 7 and a 6. We're winding down. Twain Dooley.
If I could find that boy today, I would wring his entrepreneurial neck. He shows up at my grandmother's house early on a Saturday morning. Ma'am, can I cut your grass? And she says to him, that is why I have grandsons. Actually, with her Jamaican accent, it comes out more like, I dot what make me have grandsons. And then she proceeded to wake me up. Twin! Why you make that boy come yourself to cut my grass? Hey, Grandma, I ain't make that boy do nothing, I say to myself. Twin, you know, she said the grass won't cut. Look, all I want to see is the inside of my eyelids. I mean, I was up late last night watching Friday night videos, and I just need 30 more minutes of sleep. But my grandmother, she doesn't understand this, because she's always up early, real early, as she would put it, before cock put on them drawers. But me, I have no intention of waking up before the rooster puts on his underwear. But my grandmother was always up that early and over to her employer's house, where she would wake up their children and feed them breakfast and get them ready for school. And compared to what she was doing in her native Jamaica, this was easy. Now, it's Saturday morning. It's my day off. And all I want is a few more minutes of sleep. It's Saturday morning. It's my day off. And my grandmother doesn't understand why I don't want to get some things done. Twin, why you don't cut the grass, man, before the sun gets hot? Because I'm a teenager, duh. And I would gladly burn in the noonday sun rather than get out of bed a minute early. But this kind of logic makes no sense to my grandmother. It makes no sense to a woman from a third world country with sixth grade education who had three children and was a widow before she was 30 years old. It makes no sense to a woman who came to this country and on a domestic salary, she brings her daughter to this country and buys a house large enough for that daughter and her four smart aleck kids. Now, I could pretend I was sick. I don't know. But any sickness, real or pretend, always came with homemade soup and your feet washed with rum. And that would be okay, except for it might come with the surcy tea. And surcy is this concoction that is so nasty that all the sugar in the Caribbean could not sweeten it. And it would cause the drinker to sit on the toilet until all infirmities has left his body. Twin, hurly to bed and hurly to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. So it's early on Saturday, I'm out cutting the grass. But I know I'm never going to get wealthy doing this because my lawnmower, I can't even hustle like that one dude I told you about because my lawnmower is electric and there's this long orange cord from it all the way into the house. And I would be grateful that it's not the push mower I had to use a couple of weeks ago, except there's sweat running down my wrist and I'm afraid I might get electrocuted. But I push through, I do the job in a record time, which is like 2.5 hours, and just when I sit down in front of the TV and turn on Soul Train, I hear, Twin, you know, she said the hedge won't cut. And so I'm out cutting the hedge, but not with a gas hedge trimmer, not with an electric hedge trimmer. You know that thing that the Flintstones use? Shoo, 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 shoo. Too good for me. I have a wooden handle cutlass. And I'm cutting the whole of Sherwood Forest with it. A cutlass. It's a machete. It's a pirate killing device. It's this thing that my grandmother smuggled into this country. And when I asked her how she managed to do that, she says, make it pass you like how teeth pass fall. Which is to say, you'll never get it, just like teeth never got chicken. And, well, look, things change, you know. Nowadays, when the lawn wants to be cut, you know I learned a lot from her. When the lawn needs to be cut, I hire one of them entrepreneurial dudes to get it done.
Oh, damn, there's a sign in the audience. So these are a 2-pack of early birds for you. My parents had sayings too. I'm from South Louisiana, and my dad used to wake me up by saying, wake up, Jake, you slept too late. The crawfish man done passed your gate. I don't really know what that means, but he used to tell me that all the time. And then my parents had a housekeeper, when I was in high school, and like Twain, I would want to sleep until, you know, all, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon because it was summer and I didn't have anything to do. And she would come in my room at about 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning and start vacuuming. And I would protest. I would be like, Miss Brenda, what are you doing? She's like, Trey, everybody who's getting up's already up, so you need to get your butt out of bed. All right, let's go scores. Judge number one, 10 and 10. Wow. Judge number three scores at a 9 and a 10. Judge number two scores it a 9 and a 9. And judge number four gives a 9 and a 10. Two storytellers left. Doug?
So I was born in Vietnam during the police action there. And my mom, my Vietnamese mother was, you know, Vietnamese mom, and my dad was a Green Beret or something. And I was an Amerasian child, which the Vietnamese didn't really want me there. So I was called a child of the dust, boy doy. And it was pretty sad. But don't worry, I'm spoiled rotten. Because this wonderful woman, this Pennsylvania Dutch woman, adopted me. And she came to the adoption agency. And the lady there said, are you taking him? And she said, yeah, that's the one. That's the five-year-old there. And I think she really wanted an infant, but she got this five-year-old. And the lady said, he's a real bad one. He pinches. He pinches me all the time, and he sells all the toys in the agency. He's got quite a billfold for a five-year-old. Mostly the story is about how my mom saved my life all the time. Unconditional love, Mom. I got to say thank you. And I think a lot of your moms probably give you unconditional love, too. The second time she saved my my butt was when I got naturalized. I became a citizen. I was like 13 years old. And I was standing in front of the judge, and the judge says, well, Lynn, because my name was Lynn, it was a Vietnamese name, you can change your name to anything you want now. And I was like, a 13-year-old boy. I was like, and I'd been playing with my sister a lot with her Holly Hobby ovens at the time. And I said, I want to be Xavier Holly Hobby Rocket Boy. That's my name, Your Honor. And so my mom grabs my ear and says, we'll be back. That was the first time she saved me, because I would have been beaten up every day in junior high school. The second time she really saved my life was because I sold the toys at the orphanage, but I sold toys in my own home. Like, they would get me C-3PO and they would be missing, but I'd have money for, 10 packs of bubble gum. So I found a new stash of things to do. I went into my dad's drawer, and there was always some money there. And one time there was a magazine, and it had Morgan Fairchild on it. That's all I can say about that. And it had that guy Ponch from Chips, Eric Estrada, who I wasn't really interested in. So I took this magazine, and I went to my room and, put it under my bed. But I had I wet my bed a lot then. I don't know why. And my dad was ornery for a couple days. He was wondering where his magazine went, but he couldn't really announce, where's the Playboy magazine. My mom found it because she had to change my sheets, and she quietly put it back in his drawer. So that's the second time she really saved me from the clutches of my father. The third time happened recently. I was driving my old Volvo. It was like 300,000 miles on it. And like any old Volvo, it had a name. And my mom, Helen, that was the name of my Volvo. I'm sure if you had an old Volvo, you named it because you never knew when it was going to just go. And you'd be like, goodbye, Helen. You have 500,000 miles. So like any spoiled 37-year-old, when this car broke down through an engine rod, I called my mom. Called my mom and I said, Mom, the car is gone. I'm broke. I spent all my money on iPhones, Macintoshes, and nights out eating Vietnamese food. So she said, listen, just come on up. Your dad and I will take care of this. We spoiled you this far. Why stop? So I get to my hometown of Reading, Pennsylvania, and my dad and I have a little boys' night, boy date. Like we hang out, we look at all these cool cars, Saabs and new Volvos, and he's got all these connections, so we figure, we're gonna get a stick shift Saab that's yellow. So we're ready to sign the papers, and it wouldn't be a lot a month, and my mom pulls up in her teal Oldsmobile. And she says, listen, before you sign those papers, Doug, I just want you to know that you can have my car, because I want one of those yellow Saabs out there. And I was like, cool, your car is the... She's like, right, it's the teal Oldsmobile. I was like, Mom, you're not going to have any grandchildren if I take that car. She's like, that's okay. You don't really take care of things very well anyway, so... Okay, so she says, take it. It's a 3.5 V6 Oldsmobile, 30,000 miles. It's all yours, baby. Thanks, Mom.
I thought it was only appropriate. Yeah, just like the Olympics. Ladies, who's ready? We got a 7 and a 7 and a 7 and an 8. Ooh. And then the other two judges score both 8 and 8. Yeah. Last storyteller of the evening, Christopher Love.
All right, so my mother's been trying to get me to come out to her for years. It's high school, and every few months she calls me into her bedroom, and she says, Christopher, I know you've been depressed. If there's anything you want to talk about, go ahead. I don't care what you hear at Mass on Sunday. Your father and I can accept anything. And I just say, Mom, I'll tell you when I'm ready. See, I don't want to come out to my mother in her bedroom. I don't want to do it in our little town in Ohio. I need to hold on to this secret until I'm ready. So it's a few years later. It's college, and I'm studying in Paris. My mother, she quits her job teaching fifth grade at St. Mary's. I don't really know why. It's kind of a mystery. But it gives her a chance to come and visit me, and I decide I'm finally going to tell her. But where? I mean, Paris is kind of gay, and I don't want to choose any place that's too obvious or over the top. So one day, we're at the catacombs, where all the dug-up bones from all the old cemeteries in Paris are. And those bones, they're stacked and sorted. You've got your femurs, your skulls, your arm bones. Okay, this is the place. I mean, you've got the empty sockets of all those dead Parisians staring out at you. But right now, my mom's crying. Christopher, did you know that I'm the one who raised your three aunts when your grandmother was institutionalized? And when she got out, I'm the one who was put in charge of making sure she didn't pop any pills after she already tried to commit suicide twice. Imagine, your grandfather put that burden on a 13-year-old. Oh, crap. I guess my mother's skeleton gets to come out of the closet first. But then the next day, we're at Père Lachaise, the famous cemetery, and if I can't do it at the catacomb, this is the next best place. So we pass by Edith Piaf's grave, and my mother starts singing La Vie en Rose, and she's dancing with a phantom partner. All right, I need to get her out of here. I don't need the tragic life of the sparrow to inspire any more revelations from my mother. So then we pass by Jim Morrison's grave, and I hear the words to the Doors, Touch Me, coming from one of the groupies' radios. And see, my chest tightens. There was this boy in high school who put that song on a mixtape for me, and I remember the confusion I felt when I realized he didn't want to touch me at all. But then we pass by Oscar Wilde's grave. Now, I don't know who he is. So I sit my mother down, and I blurt out, Mom, I'm gay. Now my mother, without missing a beat, as if she's practiced the perfect response, says, Christopher, last year your sister had an abortion. Okay, what? I mean, is that supposed to make me feel better? Does this mean I'm not the worst Catholic in the family? Or is she just trying to steal the show? My mother reassures me. Christopher, I'm going to tell you what I told your sister. Your father and I can accept anything. But you know, that would have been our first grandchild. All right, I'm starting to get this sneaking suspicion that this conversation has very little to do with me. And see, there are these other things I wanted to explain to my mother, but then she says, and Christopher, your father and I have been talking about your issues since you were 5. All right, at this point, I'm speechless. So then, on her last day there, we go up to Montmartre to see Sacré-Cœur. We walk in, we look up, and we see the Sacred Heart, the illuminated heart of Jesus. But then I hear this wailing. My mother has hit the ground, and she's reciting Our Fathers and Hail Marys as she's gasping for breath. Oh, crap. She's sobbing, everyone's looking, and I'm mortified. So I help my mother up, and I coax her out of the church. Through the tears, she says, "Oh, Christopher, I mean, I quit my job. I've been thinking about your grandmother so much. Your sister's abortion, it's just been so much. Oh, well, and you and your issues." So I sit my mother on the steps outside the church. It's Paris at sunset. And during a lull in the hysterics, I decide I'm going to try one last time. I want to tell her about my first boyfriend, but then it starts up again. "Christopher, I just always wanted to be a better mother for you four kids than your grandmother was for us girls." And at this point, I give up. My mother has completely and totally hijacked my coming out.
Yeah, it sounds like your family needs a little brevity in their lives, so here's a whoopee cushion. Judges? Having a hard time with this one? Ten and a nine? Eight and an eight? Oh, nine and an eight? And 10 and an 8. Let's give another hand for all of our storytellers. So while Dan tallies up the scores, I'm just going to thank y'all all again for coming out tonight. And I hope y'all had a great time. And so the winner from tonight's slam gets how many tickets? Four tickets to the Philadelphia Zoo on a guided tour by one of our Story Slam winners. That's a good prize. What the hell? And just to remind you, you can see tonight's winner along with the winners of all the other Story Slams compete at the Grand Slam at the Painted Bride on July 24th. And you can also see the Story Slams every second Monday at World Cafe Live and every fourth Tuesday at L'Etage. If you didn't pick up one of these green cards on the way in, make sure you get one on the way out. They have all the themes for all the Story Slams for the year on the back, so you can prepare your story in advance. I also hope you take this opportunity to support First Person Arts by becoming a member. Yay, members. First Person Arts is a member-supported organization, and it relies upon us for its support. It's easy to think that our organization covers all the costs, but the simple truth is admission barely covers one-fourth of all the organization does. So pick up information on the table on the way out, or you can sign up right now with one of the First Person Arts staff. I'm actually a member as well, and I just got to the point where I was going to the Story Slams like every month, and it just got ridiculous that I wasn't a member, so... become a member today. It's also really serendipitous that I was not chosen for the Philadelphia team because my story was also about a coming out. When I told my parents that I was gay, my mom interrupted me. And she was like, "Yeah, we know. You know we still love you, right?" And then my dad was like, "Laurie, I think the correct response is we love you." And my mother, in only the way that my mother can, made this event about her. She just looked at me and she was like, fine, it's Beat Up on Laurie Day. That's fine. I can take it. Okay, so I think Dan is going to announce the winner. Oh, I'm going to announce the winner. Let's start with the city. The champion of the DC versus Philly Story Slam at the 2010 Free Library Festival is... drum roll, please. DC! Oh, yeah. Boo him, Philly. Boo him. And the winner of four free passes to the Philadelphia Zoo and a golden ticket that allows them entry into the Grand Slam in July, Mike McCary. So thank you all again for coming, and enjoy the rest of the Free Library Festival.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.